Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever. This is the Newbery and Caldecott episode. Every week we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it. And also, please consider joining our Patreon. We would love your support to keep this podcast going.
Yes, we'd like to thank our new patrons. Here they are: Jenny Wong,
Cindy Yuen,
Catherine Cramp,
Katie Cordish,
Emily Goldberg,
Sabrina Shaw,
and our good friend Loretta Obachowski. Hi, Loretta!
And I think Emily is an editor, so we might know her, unless it's a different Emily Goldberg. But yes, thank you, everyone. This is so great.
Well, we are asking for just $1 an episode. And with that $1, you'll get a special notebook with art by me and a quote by Alvina's mom. The quote is, "If it is to be, it is up to me." And that is while supplies last. So you can join the Patreon at patreon.com/bookfriendsforever1. It's the numeral one. The link will also be in our show notes as well as be on our webpage.
Great. So Grace, how have you been?
Good. Feels really busy. My family is getting excited for Lunar New Year. That's in February, February 12th, and I'm really excited too. And I'm actually putting together a newsletter, which is kind of going to be like our Lunar New Year celebration. So Hazel and I have been making all these little videos to share. So we did a video where we share a craft of doing a paper cut for Lunar New Year of an ox. And today we just did a little video of us making dumplings. So it's been really fun, but Yay. A little busy. And I am going to share the dumpling recipe from Dumpling Days on this Lunar New Year newsletter. And I went through it and I realized there's like a big typo on the original recipe. It says like 2 tablespoons of salt and it's supposed to be 2 teaspoons of salt. So I am sharing the correct recipe on my newsletter. And I also put the correct recipe on my website now that I feel
really
bad.
Well, we did make that correction. In reprints of the book.
Okay, good.
Remember. Yes.
Oh, good, good.
You let
good.
Us know. It was a couple years ago, but yes. I mean, I think there are plenty of copies out there with the wrong recipe, so.
Yes. Anyway, how have you been?
Oh, I've been good, too. It's just, but really busy. I feel like work just really exploded in the last 2 weeks. And part of it is there are all these big meetings that we had. Like, we had a director's meeting that normally, you know, pre-pandemic, we would have it as an offsite, like as a breakfast, and it would be a whole half of a day, and we'd go to a restaurant, and we'd have breakfast and snacks while we talked about the previous year and our goals for the upcoming year. So it's a really great meeting, but, you know, we had to do it via WebEx this year, and so it was like 12:30 to 5, which is just a long time. I was in another 2.5-hour meeting this morning. So, you know, we had a 2-hour auction outcome review meeting last week. So just there's been a lot of really long meetings that we both, you know, it just takes a lot of time to be in the meeting, and then it takes a lot of time to prepare for the meeting on top mm-hmm. of like all the regular work and email and everything. So just trying to breathe and take it one day at a time.
And Zoom meetings are somehow more exhausting. I think it's because you have to be on. I feel like even if you're not talking, you have to like look interested.
Yeah. And then speaking of meetings, and this kind of brings us to our topic today, but, you know, even on the weekend, I almost forgot. Like, I had scheduled a walk with my friend Donna, and then all of a sudden I realized, wait, I can't walk on Saturday morning. I have to participate in this ALA midwinter breakfast, you know, online. So we had a breakfast preview, and normally, again, this is in person, and we kind of go through, you know, some of our upcoming titles of the year. And then we usually just have one special guest. But because we did this virtually, we actually had four author special guests.
Wow.
We had one picture book author, which was Peter Brown. And so I interviewed Peter. And then we had a graphic novelist. So Andrea Colvin is our editorial director of graphic publishing. And she interviewed Tori Sharp. And then we had middle grade and Nikki Garcia, who's an editor, interviewed Leslie Youngblood. And then for YA, we had Laken Zia Kemp interviewed by an editor, Alexandra Hightower. So it was just it was a really great event. And then, of course, this morning, so we're recording this on Monday, January 25th. And this morning was the ALA Youth Media Awards, which is always a really exciting time. You know, you and I had talked about how, I don't know, it was on our radars, but not really. And yeah. I think partially, yeah, everything's remote.
To be honest, I'm really happy about all the winners and anything like that, but I kind of felt like this year was a little bit, there was kind of a melancholy about it to me. I think because it's in the middle of the pandemic, it just feels like it wasn't really as exciting, like, because there's so much going on and there's so much kind of like tragedy going on, and like I couldn't really get into it as much as I usually do, you know? I just kind of felt a little sad. It didn't feel as special as it usually does to me usually.
Yeah, I wonder, I'm curious how it felt to the authors and illustrators who had books, say, quote, in the running, right? Or who were kind of, who had hopes. I mean, this was such a, last year, 2020 was such a odd year to be launching a book in the first place. So, I mean, in a way, I think it's such a great way to celebrate those books that were published in 2020 that might not have gotten the attention that they, you know, might have otherwise. So,
yeah, I guess the awards this year just felt like it was like in such a vacuum. Like in the past, I feel like it felt much more, I don't know. It just seemed like many more people were excited about it. Like I guess maybe because I was doing school visits and things like that, and I would be talking to teachers and librarians, you know, and even parents are like, oh yeah. But this year I wasn't talking to anybody. So
yeah, that's true. Or you're, you know, like going to ALA, like annual. And when you go to a conference, you walk around the booths and you see which books had all the starred reviews and are being buzzed about. And you sit in on those, you know, the ALA notable meetings. And I feel like there's just less of that, and less of that kind of talk about, oh, what book do you think will win?
And it feels like a little bit anticlimactic in a weird way for me. Yeah. But at the same time, beautiful books, and I'm so glad we get to celebrate them.
Yeah, and you know, and Little Brown had some good news. We had a Schneider Award for teens with This Is My Brain in Love by I.W. Gregorio, which I have talked about, I think, on this podcast before, you know, and I think that was a perfect example of a book that was published like right in the middle of the pandemic. It was published, on, I think, on April 1st or at the beginning of April. So that was basically when everything had shut down and everyone was kind of scrambling and not sure what was going on. So that was nice to have that honored. And then we had a Sydney Taylor Book Award Silver Medalist with They Went Left by Monica Hesse. And then our audio team got an Odyssey honor for Stamped, which Yay. We talked about on this podcast before, by Ibram X. Kendi and Jason Reynolds.
Yes.
That was a great
book. I actually listened to that book on audio.
Me too. Which Jason, you know, yes, Jason narrates it and does an amazing job. Yes. Award-winning job.
So, as I'm sure our listeners all know, the winners of the Newbery, but I will recap for everyone just in case, or if you need a reminder. So, the John Newbery Medal for the Most Outstanding Contribution to Children's Literature, the winner was When You Trap a Tiger, written by Ty Keller. The book was published by Random House, a division of Penguin Random House. And then there were five Newbery honors that were also named. There was All 13, The Incredible Cave Rescue of the Thai Boys Soccer Team, written by Christina Sontornova and published by Candlewick Press. There was Box, Henry Brown Mails Himself to Freedom, written by Carol Boston Weatherford, illustrated by Michelle Wood and published also by Candlewick. There was Fighting Words, written by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley and published by Dial Books for Young Readers. There was also We Dream of Space, written by Aaron Entrada Kelly, illustrated by Aaron Entrada Kelly and Celia Crampion, published by Green Willow. And also A Wish in the Dark, written by Christina Sun Tornava and published also by Candlewick Press. Christina won 2 silver medals, which is pretty amazing.
And then and Candlewick had 3 honors, is that right?
Yeah, seems like it. So they did great this year.
Congrats to them. And the winner of the Caldecott was We Are Water Protectors, illustrated by Michaela Goad, and it was written by Carol Lindstrom, published by Roaring Brook Press, which is a division of Macmillan. And then 4 honor books were also named: A Place Inside Me, A Poem to Heal the Heart, illustrated by Noah Denman, written by Zeta Elliott, and published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, which is also an imprint of Macmillan. The Catman of Aleppo, illustrated by Yuko Shimizu, written by Irene Latham and Kareem Shamsi Basha, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, and published by G.P. Putnam's and Sons, an imprint of Penguin Random House. Me and Mama, illustrated and written by Cosby A. Cabrera and published by Deneen Milner Books, Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers. And Outside In, illustrated by Cindy Derby, written by Deborah Underwood and published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt.
And if I'm correct, I think that's all women. Is that right?
I think so.
And what's even more, that which is amazing and like such a great thing considering the history of the Caldecott Medal, I'm like so thrilled. But what I'm even more thrilled is that Michaela Goad is Native, correct?
Yes, she is from Alaska and she's Native American.
And so that means that she is the first BIPOC woman to be given the gold Caldecott. So that's awesome. Like, we broke that ceiling. Like, yay. That was a big thing. Like, I was always like, when is a woman of color going to win the Caldecott, you know? And this happened this year, so I'm really, really, really excited about that. And
yeah,
I'm
so great. Happy. And I think, so she definitely is the first Indigenous creator to win the Caldecott Medal. I believe there was one artist who won an honor in the 40s.
That's pretty amazing because not only is she one of the very, very few Indigenous, she's also the first BIPOC woman to win the gold. So that's great. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, I feel like this, the variety of books that were honored this year was wonderful. And, you know, I think I'm not sure. How did we do in our predictions? So I did predict that We Are Water Protectors would win something. And that was the book that Little Brown, when we did our mock Caldecott, that is the book that won our mock Caldecott. So that was not a surprise. I know that Allison, she had called out Fighting Words, written by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley. And she had also
called out All 13.
Yeah, she loved All 13. I mean, she loved it so much that I bought the book in December, which I haven't read yet, but now I really definitely want to read it.
I chose Brian Collier's book, and I don't even think it was given a CSK, though I still completely believe it deserved one. and then I also chose Prairie Lotus, which did win an Apala honor. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't completely off.
Yeah, and I had chosen for the Newbery King and the Dragonflies by Kaysen Callender, and that won a CSK honor. And I also chose When Stars Are Scattered, which I believe won a couple of things, but now I'm blanking on what it won, but it did not win the Newbery. but it is interesting that, you know, I think, actually, did any graphic novels win either Caldecott or Newbery this year? I don't think so. And no picture books were in the Newbery, although there was nonfiction with All 13. So interesting. I mean, I think, something you were saying earlier when we were talking is there are a lot of repeat winners.
Yeah, especially in the Newbery. I thought that, like, it was a lot of medalists who won another medal, like Kimberly Brubaker Bradley had won a silver medal before, and she won another silver, and Aaron Entrada Kelly had won a gold, and now she won another silver. So it's like a lot of double medalists, which was pretty cool.
I think for Caldecott, though, unless I'm mistaken, I think they're all first-time winners.
Oh, I think you're right about the Caldecott.
Yeah. Anyway, that's exciting. It's a nice mix.
Yeah, it's a great mix. You know, it's really amazing, and what I really took away from it this year was, like, you know, diversity really was front and center in all of the choices, I felt like. And that was really beautiful to see. I think Asians had a really good showing in the Newbery, which, like, really makes me happy.
Yeah.
Of course, these are all, like, completely selfish reasons. Because, I mean, I had, first, not to make it about me, but I think for the earlier part of my career, I think I felt like there were so few Asians making books that I felt that a lot of readers looked at my books and expected it to be the story for everyone. And seeing all of these other Asian authors coming out, it just takes so much more pressure off of me, like, even if it was just in my head, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did want to call out another winner. So Daniel Nayeri won The Prince for Everything Sad Is Untrue, which is another book that I had talked about on this podcast and loved. I think I talked about it, but that was really exciting for me to see.
Editor, is that correct?
Yes, he's a publisher actually at Odd Dot, which is an imprint over at Macmillan.
He was
a former chair of the CBC Diversity Committee as well.
Oh.
And I think that's when we became friends.
Is that something new? A publisher winning an award?
Well, let's see. David Levithan, I think, has won the... Has he won the Prince? Maybe... I don't know. I feel like he might have won something in the past, and he's a publisher at Scholastic.
Any editors? Have any editors won awards?
Gosh, I don't know, actually. So... that's exciting. I mean, you know, what's also exciting is that Everything Sad Is Untrue was published by Levine Querido, which is a new imprint that Arthur A. Levine had started last year, I think. And so I think they had a couple of books recognized this year. So that was exciting to see. It was just, you know, so even though I feel like a lot of the books weren't necessarily on my radar, but of course it's still just wonderful to see the awards and, you know, and it's also always fun to be on Twitter and see people get excited and tweet about the awards.
Yeah, and it's really nice when you don't have a book in the running.
There's a little less pressure. Yeah.
So much less pressure. And you're just like, yay.
You can just celebrate. But now I have a lot of books to add to my reading list.
Me too.
So we thought we'd also talk about our favorite past Newbery and Caldecott winners that are not our own.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're doing this episode because, like I said earlier, like there was kind of like this feeling of melancholy about the awards, and by doing this episode, I feel like, oh, it's kind of like bringing me back up and like making me really excited about the awards again. So I'm really glad. And we can and also just like talking about the old traditions of the books that have won in the past that we loved.
So do you want to start and tell us what your favorite Newbery winner was?
My favorite Newbery book as a kid was The Cricket in Times Square. And it's all about this boy who lives in New York City and he finds a cricket and he keeps it as a pet. And kind of like the adventures the cricket has in Times Square. And I just love that book because it was so sweet and so... And there's such this poetic thread about in the very beginning when Mario first finds the cricket, one of the customers at his dad's newsstand tells him the legend of Orpheus and how when Orpheus sang, everybody was completely quiet and you could hear the song for miles and miles away. And then at the very, very end, the cricket sings and that's what happens. Like everybody stops and you can hear the crickets chirping from miles and miles away. And I just remember that so vividly and loving it so much. So what's interesting though, is that when I grew older, I started to feel a little uncomfortable about that book because they have a Chinese character in it. And the Chinese character is written with a very thick accent, you know, like mm-hmm. And I worried that he was being seen as a caricature because of the way that they wrote his dialogue, because it was such a stereotype accent. But I keep going back and forth about it because, you know, my parents speak with an accent, right? And I mm-hmm. feel like, well, maybe I don't need to feel so sensitive about that. Like, that's how they speak. This actually kind of recalls what I was saying earlier about all the Asians showing up for the Newbery. Like, I think if there are lots and lots of books with all different kinds of Asian characters, then then the Asian character in the cricket in Times Square speaking with an accent is not really a big deal. But mm-hmm. it was a big deal back then because there were so few Asian characters. And so he became more of a stereotype, and he became this kind of like stock character that I cringed at. But I kind of feel like now it's not as bad because kids can be exposed to all different kinds of Asian characters, and he just becomes one of the many, which mm-hmm. is what I really like. The other book that I really loved was Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. And I kind of forgot about this book, but Allison reminded me of this when we were doing our Christmas episode, and I was asking mm-hmm. for book recommendations. So I recently reread it, and I love it. I think it really holds up. It is so great. It's about these rats who were experimented on, and now they're super intelligent, and how they're trying to, you know, it's just really cool. And I read it to Hazel, and she really loved it. So that is a Newbery book that has really stood the test of time, I think.
I've loved both of those too. I remember.
Yeah, and it's funny because the ones that I loved as a kid, they're both animal books, and then I look at my daughter, I'm like, oh, we're similar. Like, we both love the animal books as a child. As an adult, I think my favorite books have been, like, The Wanderer by Sharon Creech. She won the gold for Walk Two Moons, but I actually think I like The Wanderer better. Then my other favorite one was One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia. That was really great. But everybody loved that book. That book had so many stickers on it, they had to, like, redesign the cover. And I have to say that I really also really liked The Princess Academy by Shannon Hale. And I remember when that won, I was really surprised because it had, like, princess in the title. And I was like, oh, I was kind of surprised that they would pick something so, you know, princessy because, you know. But then I read it and I was like, ah. And it just made my respect for Shannon go so high. Like, she was able to reclaim the word princess. I really love that book, too. Anyway, how about you?
You know, I was the type of kid that just loved reading books that won awards. So I was one of those kids that went to the library, and if it had a sticker on it, I just would read it. So, you know, I was looking at the past winners, and I honestly loved all of them. But I guess just to call out a couple. One is The Westing Game by Ellen Raskin. I remember, and I will say I haven't read these as adults, so I don't know if they stand up. And, you know, I've heard some like small criticisms of the Westing Game, just in terms of lack of diversity, or maybe
there's yeah. Asian characters in there, mm-hmm. also a little bit stereotype, but also the Asian characters in there are kind of stereotyped, but also I think with this new wave of diverse books coming out, I think it could also be slowly, we can look at it with a softer eye as mm-hmm. more and more diverse books come out, I think.
Yeah, but I remember loving that book, and then, you know, I read it on my own, and it was also a book that my teacher, I think maybe fifth or sixth grade, read out loud to the class, so that's just one of the books that just, like, stayed with me. And then, you know, it's funny, so I remember that you had this very worn copy of The Hero and the Crown by mm-hmm. Robin McKinley, and I remember loving that book, and that was another favorite. And then as an adult, so I loved Walk Two Moons by Sharon Creech. And some of you might remember that I had, a blog called Bloom Abilities, and that was named after another Sharon Creech book called Bloom Ability, which I also loved.
I love her work.
Yeah, and I did read that one as an adult. I think I read that when I was a bookseller at Barnes & Noble. And then another book I read as an adult was From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler by E.L. Konigsberg. And I remember reading that when I was an editorial assistant at Little Brown, and it was just one of those books that I had always meant to read, and I just loved it. So that's one. And then, of course, I loved A Single Shard by Linda Sue Park, Holes by Lewis Sacker, and then, you know, most recently, you know, I just read New Kid by Jerry Craft last year, and I just absolutely loved it. So
you haven't read Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankenweiler in a while, have you?
I read that when I was, I guess I read it in 1999. Why? Have you read it recently?
I read it fairly recently, like in the last 5 years. And I remember thinking there's like a scene where like they take the brother and sister, like take a bath together in the fountain. And I was like, I wonder if this would fly these days, you know, like things like that, you know, like things that like when I read it as a child, I didn't think about it. But things now I'm like, I wonder if that would really fly now, you know?
Well, I guess I read it as an adult and it didn't stand out to me, but maybe I just like glanced over it. All right. Well, let's move on to Caldecott. What is your favorite Caldecott book?
This is hard because I love a lot of Caldecott books. But I was trying to think. I think my favorite is Miss Rumphius by Barbara Cooney. And I just love that book because it's kind of like a lesson for life, you know, because it's all about Miss Rumphius, who decides that she like wants to do these things like see the world. But the last thing she knows that she needs to do is make the world a little more beautiful. And she has to figure out how to do that when she's like an older woman. And I don't know, I just think it's so beautiful. And of course, I love Blueberries for Sal. I mean, that's the book that inspired A Big Mooncake for Little Star. And I have very, very fond memories of The Little House by Virginia Lee Burton. I often tell the story when people ask me if like my parents read aloud to me, and my parents did not read aloud to me, but they did get me one of those books on tape. And back then the books were not on tape, the books were on record, and they were like these floppy records, and you would put it in your record player. And I remember I listened to The Little House by Virginia Lee Burton so often with this little floppy record that it became warped, and it'd be like The Little House. and I would keep listening to it. And I remember when Hazel was younger and I read this book to her, I was like, The Little House. And she's like, why are you reading it like that? And I was like, oh, it's just a memory. Anyway, how about you?
Oh, I love The Little House. I was actually just, you know, we were walking around Brooklyn, and, you know, when you walk around Brooklyn, you see, sometimes you'll see a little house, and it looks kind of out of place between the tall buildings. And so I think Stephen had pointed one out like that, and I said, oh, that reminds me of that book, The Little House, and he hadn't heard of it, so I told him all about it, and yeah, that was definitely a favorite. But my all-time favorite picture book, you know, and it also happens to have been a Caldecott winner, was The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats. So that one, by far.
I knew you were going to say that, which is why I didn't choose that.
Yeah. and I also really, I mean, I actually didn't realize until just now that there's a snow theme, but I love books about snow, so I also love Snowflake Bentley, which was by Jacqueline Briggs Martin and illustrated by Mary Azarian. Yeah. And that one, I think that won the Caldecott when I had just started working at Little
Brown. I love that book too.
And then another one I'll just mention was Joseph Had a Little Overcoat by Tim Sims Tabak. I think that one won while I was working at Barnes & Noble as a bookseller. And I just really loved that. And I thought it was so clever how it used all the die cuts in it. But, you know, and I don't mean this to say this to disparage the Caldecott winners, but it's funny, like, unlike the Newbery medal, when I look back at the Caldecott winners, I love more of the honor books than the actual winners. I mean, of course, I think the winners were beautiful books, but they just were not my personal, I guess, choice.
I don't know. I feel like, to be honest, when I look at the past, that's kind of how I feel about like the Newberries and the Caldecotts. I usually like I think the gold winners are amazing, but the ones that like touched my heart and stayed with me forever were like the silver medals, you know, like
Charlotte's Web. Yeah, it's true.
So it's an interesting thing, like I wonder why. Before I won any awards, I can't remember how this came up, but it was like, would you rather win the gold or the silver? And back then I said the silver, because the silver ones are better and you don't have to give a speech.
Do you still feel that way?
Yes and no. I would actually kind of like to give the speech now, I think. I think I've gotten to that point where I like to for people to hear what I have to say.
Yep.
I would love to win the gold someday. I have a sneaking suspicion if I were ever to win a gold, I would secretly think the silvers were better though.
Yeah, it's, you know, I remember back when I was starting my career, and as an editor, my goal, I had always been as I already said, drawn to award winners. And so I really wanted to edit a book that won an award. And I remember that I would always say, like, of course I wanted bestsellers too, but I preferred to have a book win an award, and then that it was an award that would launch it onto the bestseller list. Although I think kind of the best of both worlds would be something like When You Reached Me by Rebecca Stead. Like, I remember that hit, that had a lot of buzz for the Newbery, and it did go on to win, but it was a New York Times bestseller in its own right before the award.
That is kind of like the dream for me. Like, when people say, if you could choose any trajectory for your book, like, that would be the dream for me, to have it have that kind of trajectory of When You Reach Me, where it was like so popular and beloved, and just winning the award was just kind of like the cherry on top.
Yeah. But it, you know, sales are not a guarantee, I guess, when you win. It really does. I mean, if you look at past winners, I feel like it's interesting just to see, like, which ones kind of became classics and became lasting, and which ones were, you know, not forgotten, but just not as much in the public discourse, I guess.
Yeah. I remember I had an interesting conversation with Linda Sue Park, and how she's like, Newberries are not created equal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because, you know, she won for a single shard way before We Need Diverse Books. So I'm sure she probably felt it really different. Like, but, you know, I can imagine, like, sitting next to, like, Louise Sacker with Holes, you know, like, and then you have Where the Mountain Meets the Moon. You know, it just, especially before this interest and passion for diversity, it was just such a different kind of, I don't want to say bias, but a different kind of idea of what your book was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so
did you feel that winning the Newbery Honor, because that was the first award you won, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like that changed your life or changed
it,
your
it
career?
It did, you know? But it completely did, and I am so, so grateful, because before the Newbery Honor, I was known as Grace Lynn, multicultural author and illustrator, right? And mm-hmm. and that was a really, I'm very proud of being an Asian author and illustrator, and I was very proud of being the Grace Lynn multicultural author and illustrator as well. But that label was definitely, definitely limiting, you know? And by winning the Newbery Honor, the label changed, and it became Grace Lynn Newbery Honor Author mm-hmm. and Illustrator. And that label had much more scope than multicultural author and illustrator. People were much more interested in Newbery Honor than multicultural. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, I remember going to many a place and sitting even with my Newbery Honor book next to, you know, other authors who didn't win awards, and having nobody at my table and their lines just going out the door, you know?
Yeah.
So
it happens to everybody. But I will say, you know, when Where the Mountain Meets the Moon, like, your book was selling. Now, it didn't hit the list before the award, did it?
No.
But it did sell really well. Like, I remember it sold well. And then when the award happened, it did launch the book onto the bestseller list. And unlike, I think, some of the other honor winners that year, I felt like your book was the one that kind of rose to the top in terms of sales. So I feel like, I don't know, from an editor's point of view, it was kind of the perfect book to have won, you know, that honor, because uh-huh. it is a commercial book. It's a commercial book that I think people don't see as a commercial book, because maybe you're quote-unquote multicultural and it was set in China. But it's such a, I mean, it's such an action adventure, and it really is how we were pitching it, the Chinese Wizard of Oz. I mean, the Wizard of Oz, talk about commercial, like, that is super commercial. So I think plot-wise, character-wise, setting, like, you know, the way you wrote it with, you know, you really worked on the plotting and the pacing of that book to, you know, have kind of cliffhanger endings to chapters and, you know, keep readers turning the pages. So anyway,
well, I guess that's an interesting thing. I mean, I guess there's so many people, so many authors and illustrator who win awards, and it's interesting how some of them you don't remember, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm curious about, like, who's able to leverage the win, right? I feel like there's some people, like, okay, John Klassen won the Caldecott, and all of a sudden he's like, he's pretty much a household name in the mm-hmm. book world, or Christian Robinson, right?
Yeah,
like
everybody, Mo Willems.
Yeah, everybody knows who they are now. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of other illustrators who have won, and they'll be like, who? Even like Mary Azarian, who you talked about winning, who did Snowflake Bentley, and I think her work is gorgeous. But I think that more people would know John Klassen than Mary Azarian.
Yeah, and I do think maybe the difference is the kind of commercial literary that we have talked about in the past, too. You know, I think John Klassen has, you know, such a distinct style that, I mean, not, I don't know, that this might sound like I'm disparaging it, but I'm not. But it's very like Hallmark card. Like, people were really familiar with that style from just the kind of the cultural landscape. I don't know. It was aesthetically what everyone was familiar with and loved. But at the same time, it was really distinctive and really, you know, just distinguished. So I feel like when you kind of straddle that literary and commercial, you know, line, I think that's when you're able to leverage it. So like Beagle, for example, with Dan Santat. I mean, I don't know if I've said this in the past, but that book was not on my radar as a possible Caldecott winner. I mean, not that it's, obviously it's worthy and it's beautiful and it's distinguished, but it was also very commercial. Like, we saw that more as a commercial book.
Now, but do you notice that the people that we've mentioned as those who were able to leverage the awards, they've been men? Mm-hmm. Like, and is it, well, because...
Yeah, no, but you leveraged the award too. To a lesser extent, maybe.
Yeah, I guess I did, but I guess I don't feel like I leveraged it to the same extent, but maybe I did. I mean, you know.
Well, I remember actually that when you talk about like men versus women, I mean, maybe this is kind of telling, is that I remember Victoria Stapleton, who's our school and library marketing director, encouraging you to raise your school visit rate after the Newbery Honor.
Yes.
And I think I remember you feeling uncomfortable about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the difference, you know? Like, I think you didn't necessarily feel like you were worthy of that rate, where maybe a man would not have that feeling. Mm-hmm. A certain type of man, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's like my good friend Jarrett, right? Who was a National Book Award finalist. After he became a National Book Award finalist, you know, he's like, I love this medal, you know, I'm gonna wear this medal every day, and like, and he joked about it, and like, but he you know, and every time we saw him, he's like, I'm wearing the medal, like, and it was really cute, and it was really charming, it was really funny, but it was also something that I don't think too many women would do, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's true.
And maybe it's just the sheer confidence that is in the patriarchy, you know, that is able to that gives them the power to leverage these awards.
Yeah,
and I think things are already changing now too. Like I said, yeah. I think that's really great.
Yes,
I agree. Well done, committee members.
And I'd love for our listeners to let us know what your favorite past Newbery and Caldecott winners are.
Fortune cookies.
For our fortune cookies segment this week, we're going to talk about what we're reading right now. So before we start our big stack of Newbery books, so Alvina, what are you reading right now?
Well, I'm actually reading three books, but I decided I'm just going to mention one of them because I'm going to save the other two books for a future segment after I've finished reading them. So the book I'll mention, I just actually started listening to it this morning on audiobook, and it is Know My Name by Chanel Miller. And it's an adult book, it's a memoir, and you might know this book as she was the previously unnamed victim of Brock Turner. And it's so, you know, my friend Donna actually recommended it. She teaches memoir writing classes, but she just said that she felt like this was one of the best books she's ever read. Wow. And I was already mildly interested in it, so I thought, okay, well, that's high praise. So, and it is really great, I mean, so far. Just how she writes, it's, you know, you just really, it's so descriptive, and it's you know, I can't even put into words. So I'll talk about it more after I finish it, but I definitely recommend it. Know My Name by
That's
Chanel
so cool.
Miller.
Do you know Chanel Miller actually follows me on Instagram?
Ooh, fun. Maybe she listens to this podcast.
I don't know, maybe, because she actually purchased one of Hazel's quack ducks.
Oh, that's small world.
I know, small world.
How about you? What are you reading right now?
All right, so I am not reading for myself. I'm reading books too, because I'm going to be starting the Winter Bookworms Club for my daughter. So I'm reading books to see what would be good to share with them. And actually, a listener of this podcast sent in a message. Her Stephanie, I'm so sorry if I butcher your last name. Stephanie Lucianovic sent in a message saying that she recommended that I share They Didn't Teach This in Worm School by Simone Leah for the book club, since it was like worm themed. And I just started reading it. It's really funny. I think we're going to start with that one, just because it is worm themed, and it's wacky, like just like how they like their books.
Yay.
The other book that Hazel and I just finished, you know, we read a little bit every night before bed, and we just finished reading The Marvelous Land of Oz. And I was so excited that she liked it, because I read her The Wizard of Oz a couple years ago, and she liked it, but she didn't love it. So I wasn't sure if she would be really into it. But then I read her this one, and now she's older, and she gets it, and she loves how wacky and kind of crazy it is. And so we're going to read the whole series of Oz books, which makes me so happy, because those are some of my favorite books when I was a kid.
I love the whole series, yeah. Well, Stephanie, and I don't know how to pronounce her last name either, but I'm going to guess it's Lucianovic, maybe? Stephanie Lucianovic? I'll say she actually wrote a picture book that we're publishing at Little Brown coming out this fall called
awesome.
Hello, Star.
And I'm sorry, say it again?
It's called Hello, Star, and it's illustrated by Vashti Harrison. So that's exciting.
Oh, awesome.
Yay. So, hi, Stephanie.
Thanks for listening.
And now we'll end, as we always do, with what we're grateful for. Grace, what are you grateful for this week?
Okay, so what am I grateful for? So I have something that I'm grateful for, but I'm afraid it's like TMI. So in the middle of the pandemic, my head started to get really, really itchy. Mm-hmm. Okay, like really, really scratchy, and and it was driving me crazy, and I was itching and itching and itching it. It was not lice or anything like that, but it was.
There was anything shameful about that?
Yes, not that there's anything shameful about lice, but it was not lice or anything like that. And I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Oh, you have I can't remember what they call it, like seborrheic." Some kind of dermatitis. And she's like, it's because you're stressed out. She's like, mm-hmm. You're stressed out. And so she like gave me some cream, and I kept using it and using it, but it still kept going and going, and it was itchy, and it's been bothering me so long. And I finally saw a dermatologist, and magically it seems to have stopped itching around the time of the election. I was trying to think, was it the election or the inauguration? But in between the election and inauguration, it has stopped itching completely. And I'm not sure if it's the magic medicine that the dermatologist gave me, but I have a feeling that it really was stress-related, and that I am now a lot less stressed out, and now my head doesn't itch anymore.
Well, that's great. I mean, it could have been a combination. I mean, I do feel like stress and anxiety exasperates a lot of conditions, I guess.
Yeah, I have a feeling that, but you know, I never had this before. So the doctor is like, oh, it's probably instigated by stress. So I was probably instigated by stress, and then it became something, and then.
Yeah, maybe like shingles. Like my older brother had shingles at the beginning of the year, and I think it was definitely brought on by stress. I mean, that is actually brought on by stress. So,
wow. And I had no idea.
Not good.
Yeah. So anyway, that is what I am grateful for. before. I'm sorry if that was TMI for people. Anyway, Alvina, what are you grateful for?
Well, I feel like my grateful is similar to yours in that it is not necessarily TMI, but I don't know, maybe, I don't know, health, medical related. So, you know, loyal listeners will know that I've struggled with insomnia, which is another something else that is triggered, I guess, by stress. And I've tried so many different things, and I'm still trying different things, and it has gotten better, I would say. But we just bought a new mattress topper from Molecule, and it's amazing. So we've only had it two nights, and the first night I slept over 8 hours, which I don't know the last time I slept that long. And last night I slept, I guess, 7.5 hours, which again is like longer than normal. Like, I feel like generally, I'm a 6 hours of sleep person, which is not enough for me, but I just, that's when I wake up and then I can't fall back asleep. So I've been able to fall back asleep with this mattress topper, and I'm hoping it is the mattress topper and not just coincidence or who knows.
But I think if you believe it is, then it will be.
So I am grateful for my new Molecule mattress topper.
That's awesome. We should I think we should do a whole episode on sleep. I am such a what do you call it? Sleep warrior thing now.
Let's
like, I'm so into it.
I have a lot to say on sleep.
Yeah, me too. And I think, like, there's this whole thing where we are so proud of being sleepless, and I think we've got to change that.
Right. I agree. So that was our Caldecott and Newbery episode. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at Pacey Works Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram.
And I'm at Pacey Lin on both platforms. We love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever, or send us a message via our website, BookFriendsForever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it.
And please, please, please join our Patreon. We'd really appreciate it. The link is in the show notes.
I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
Have a great week.
And don't forget to read.
Bye.